kind of like bohemian artists.
They were so bohemian.
We didn't have to rebel too much.
Yeah. We rebelled in other ways, but
Well, I'm a youngin'. Came to Santa Cruz in 1994. Oh my God. I'm from Canada. My name is Bruce Damer. I've been at these meetings, three or four of them, several years. And I really got enamored of or with or in this world and all you people and all your soft and beautiful energy and your vision. And I just love all of you. And so I started getting into this very, very late coming. So I had the career in tech and the career with NASA and all that sort of stuff. But when you all were at the farm 3 years ago, I'll just give you my update on the psychedelic stuff. I just inherited or made the huge life mistake of accepting Timothy Leary's library and the news archive, which is actually the jewels and the remnants of the record collection, some of his ashes, a couple of his silk shirts, the chandelier from his house in Beverly Hills, and stuff like that. So even... the story was the New York Public Library. I was the agent for the trust, for the trustee, which is Dennis Berry, was one of the co-trustees, and she called in tears one day because we had found a home for the archive at the New York Public Library. And this was April of 2011, and their truck had just pulled out of the storage unit in Livermore, and she was heaving the stuff that they didn't take into the dumpster. And including 100 or 200,000 news clippings starting from the Harvard Crimson's on up, every news story, professionally clipped, heaving it into the dumpster. And I said, is the dumpster outside the building? And she said, no. And I said, make sure it stays in the building. And I drove my motor home up and I saved it all. And I put my back out, heaving 1,000 pounds of financial records off of the news clippings. And I noticed, and I was gradually looking as these things were flying past us, that they're all bounced checks. And I remember what Ram Dass said, I loved Tim, I hated the bounced checks. It's like I was heaving 1,000 pounds of bounced checks. This is enormous. It was just Tim's life. But anyway, so all of that got intubated, and it's in tubs. So for the last 3 years, I finished my PhD, because I was in the throes of just going to go, and I defended my thesis on a very trippy thing called Origins of Life. Found a formula for the origin of life, blah, blah, blah. Been working on that. I'm now at UCSC working with Dave Diemer on that. But, and for the record or not for the record, since you all had such great experience, and I had my first experience in the psychedelic space is in 1999 through Terrence McKenna. And I met Terrence McKenna. I didn't trust psychedelics because I had a psychedelic brain, and I would do these endogenous trips to do my work. And I said, I'm not going to fuck up this system. And then I met Terrence, and I thought, well, it's time, because this guy's obviously, he's still intact, And so he turned me on. And from that point, I sort of dabbled here and there, but my mushrooms. Too many mushrooms. Well, the 3 grams didn't work, so it's like, oh, I have this sack, I'll just eat them all. Anyway, I was alone in the wilderness in the Southern Sierra. I was alone and way out in the middle of nowhere. Full moon, whole thing. Anyway, that moon became the implosion of the universe, by the way.
Ask you a question.
Yeah.
Past lives when you were on acid? I would like
mushrooms. Yeah, mushrooms. It's another story, but so in recent, just to sort of update, so I decided to, in the last year, to go try everything again. So what it introduced me to, and everything it was, so I went, I was in the Amazon rainforest drinking ayahuasca. I was on mountaintops in acid tests, a new kind of acid test. Oh my God. With Mountain Girl, and so we had, this stuff is going on. So we had the acid grannies at our place in July. So bringing the Haight-Ashbury acid grandmas, 7 of them. And it was so wonderful. They arrive, and what they're so prepared with the food items and the things, and then this. And what is the breakfast? it's a flat of macaroni and cheese. And I said, well, why mac and cheese? It's the tradition and the hate. I said, well, why? Because for several things, if you can't understand what a fork is, you can get it down. You don't have to masticate it. It's a cube of an object, and it's got fat and sugar and salt, and it's like comforting and everything. So it's like the macaroni and cheese for breakfast. So anyway, if you want to be part of the next Ask the Grannies experience, let me know. All that said, sort of, I went since April of last year until about October when I went to Peru and sort of blew the doors off, blew through the top of the cosmos. I sort of did everything. You know, one after the other kind of thing. Huh? And I'm back. But it helped me do my science, so I had a key insight for my science, and I blew my foundation completely out. So now what I'm doing is, and this is why it's so delightful to be with you guys, is I'm quitting. So I'm getting... I'm dropping out. So my company couldn't stand me anymore, so they gave me a sabbatical starting in November and cut my salary way back and everything, but kept me kind of on this life support. But I'm never going back. So I'm off on to the adventures of new things. So in a sense, I'm dropping out. Again, I dropped out in 94 to move to Boulder Creek. But I'm really happy about, I'm doing a lot of public speaking at these, West Coast and international, festival scene, which this one wonderful gentleman's a part of. And I do visionary talks. So I listen to a zillion hours of Tim Leary and Ram Dass and Huxley and Watts and McKenna and whatnot. And I've mainlined those people because I have a vast collection now on the Internet Archive called Psychedelia. And it has 120 gigabytes of stuff in it. So anything that you produce can be shoved there for all time, and it's backed up. It's the second data center. It's at the Library of Alexandria in Egypt. You know, it's a huge collection, and that's meant to be a dumping ground and a Library of Alexandria for all this stuff that Brewster Kahle will defend, and that's where the movies from Pierre Sogel are now archived, and so anything you have can go there. And Andrew's a real archive junkie, just like me. I mean, it's a disease. We go to meetings. But we're not cured.
We're not cured.
I'm just delightful to be here. I'm as far as the Timothy Leary archive. I mean, so here's the planning, and I'm hoping Andrew can help with this, Indiegogo funding to get money to ship it off to get the clippings scanned. It's tricky. They have to be done individually and flattened and all that stuff. The clippings will get scanned. The books will get scanned. Even the records can be dumped. And then that will go online in Psychedelia Collection for the world. And it literally...
Why doesn't Brewster do this?
Well, I took a tub up to Brewster. They did the scans, and it's about $1,000 of employee time. And he's going to do it, except that his scanning center burnt to the ground on November 3rd. The entire Christian Science reading room is gone, but they're rebuilding their book scanner. We need the book scanner to have the plates to flatten the clippings in order to do the shoots. Okay. So it's coming back. So February, if I can get a movie made of me talking extemporaneously and excitedly and get an Indiegogo campaign, CBS is going to run a story internationally. The reporters have been there, they've done all their shoots and everything, and they've done their interviews, and if their story hits, and it'll fund our campaign, and there's several other news outlets that are going to promote it for 3 months. If I can raise 50,000, 60,000, that kind of thing, I could actually pay myself and have a new career, could pay Andrew, and buy document preservation binders for the delicate stuff. And inside, and this is sort of a long story to get to, in that collection, there's a lot of Santa Cruz stuff. Because there's stories. Tim hired a professional news service for about 6 years out of Millbrook and then out of different things. And there are thousands of individual clippings that are labeled, and there's Santa Cruz Sentinel, Santa Cruz Sentinel, Santa Cruz Sentinel. And covers and zines and everything. So if we can get all this stuff scanned, I'm going to give away the clippings. If you give $25, you'll get a free clipping in the mail. To spread it around, right? Spread it around so people feel they have a piece of this history in their hand. If they give $50, they get two clippings or something like that. So
you're on Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Do a fundraiser on Facebook.
Oh, we'll do everything.
Ongoing.
We'll do everything. And so all that said, that project, if I can get it going, will feed hopefully this group and help support this group. And if you guys also have clippings and stories and paper artifacts of this era, we can put them into the scanning run. So if we have paper artifacts.
Did you say paper artifacts? Are those the only
artifacts? Oh, any artifacts, fine, but for well, video, movies, and stuff like that. But right now.
I have a new interview with Jack Leary that just got sent to me from New York. It's pretty funny. It's entertaining.
And understand that the news archive is the entire story of the counterculture, the drug scene, whatever. Not just Leary, it's everything. Mm-hmm. It's the totality. Of course, wherever Leary was mentioned, they have it, but it's the totality. It's the biggest collection of its kind and it exists. But if you guys have that, I mean, we'll make up tubs, like tubs 19, 20, and 21 could come from this group, and then they could get put into the stream and get captured and professionally done and meta tagged and put up into the archive and blah, blah.
My question is, would it be cost effective to buy
It's so time consuming.
And then do it yourself. No, it's too
grueling. Unless you have a grad student that just a grad student is like, I love this stuff. I want to read every piece and let them do it. And yes, then they sit there for 3 months and
not
do
if
it.
They read every piece.
Well, not all right. Well, you know what?
You'd
maybe
be surprised
just somebody,
at how much stuff he has.
A lot
I mean,
of
it was
times,
tubs.
Yeah.
And
I know,
boxes,
and I just saw just. Going through your
if you know of somebody who would really be into it, a single human being could do it.
Well, what I was thinking.
Or two human beings.
I'm thinking like a couple, three people that would take turns scanning. Scanning.
Think of my ear.
It's challenging. It's
okay.
Very tedious.
All right, well then.
Now, if I would prefer it that way, because right now what I'm trying to do is get a bulk scanned, chopped up, put online, and then somebody can sort them out later, because they're not sorted by date or anything. It's like they were in a dumpster. So
right.
So
yeah.
It's like 1967 story on such and such is right next to a, you know, this is a great one. I'll tell you one more story and then let it go on, because there was one clipping, 1962. This is probably right after Kennedy's speech about going to the moon. And it says, NASA to use LSD to train lunar astronauts. So I said to myself, okay, do your thought experiment. If America had become the psychedelic America we all dream of, Neil Armstrong would have landed on the moon in 1967 because the engineering would have been so much better. And then he would have stepped down the ladder and instead of saying something lame like a fighter pilot kind of struggling for words, saying one small step for man, he would have stood on the moon, taken it all in, and then said, far out. And the whole world would have said, far out.
Pass the baton.
Pass the baton.
So my name is Andrew O'Keefe. I'm definitely like relatively new to all this. The first time that I visited Santa Cruz was in 2010. Bruce invited me to come to this, and I'm extremely grateful. But I initially met Bruce recording lectures at Burning Man. In short, what I've been doing for the past few years is I've been facilitating the sale of art, like particularly visionary art. I've been setting up galleries at festivals and running retail spaces in person and online. And I have a background in like video and film and audio and stuff. So the past like 2 years maybe I've been making an effort to do audio recording, archiving, interviews, video interviews with people working digital media. And as of late, I've been doing my best to interview as many people as I can over the phone, text, audio, video, and I'm actively like trying to create a career in archiving and preserving the kind of stuff that's happening now. I grew up in the suburbs of central Connecticut and a really homogenous, generic culture, and it was through the internet and the library that I found all these books about psychedelic counterculture of the 60s, and it was through that I started to learn more about the stuff that was happening like today. And I moved to California in 2009, and as soon as I moved to California, I started going to festivals, Burning Man, all that, and I've met all these people, and I've began to kind of go down the chain of the lineage of everybody who's been involved in this counterculture for a really long time, and I'm extremely fascinated and inspired by it. And if, you know, the least that I could do is help continue and kind of pass the baton to people my age now and tell the stories of what was happening then and now, so future generations have access to it. And then I feel like my job will be done. So yeah, that's me. 26. How's it going? Good to see you too.
Oh, yeah.
So
you guys
know each other.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Glenn Allen Howard, and I'm fifth generation Californian on my mother's side from an old Republican family that has two black sheep, me and Kim Gordon, the woman who plays bass for Sonic Youth. And anyway, I grew up in Palo Alto and started hanging out at Stanford in seventh grade, 1960. 1961, being a little science nerd, I was all about the TV show One Step Beyond. Mm-hmm. And I'm 13 years old, barely in eighth grade, and they have an episode on mushrooms. And it's Dr. Jeffrey Smith from Stanford University. I rode my bicycle faster than I ever pedaled that sucker. That was my bicycle day. Over to Jeffrey Smith's office, because I knew where it was, and I'm here to sign up for these mushrooms. And he told me they couldn't bring them back into this country, which is not true, because the people that digitize things to archive them often get rid of the hard copies. Well, that TV show was censored, you know, but a 16 millimeter print survived. And somebody went to the 16 millimeter print, and so you can, if you look at One Step Beyond Mushrooms, this 1961 TV show will pop up, and the host, John Newland, takes mushrooms. He's, this is the greatest thing ever. And, you know, I mean, I was just, you know, okay, let's go, you know, and I thought, you know, as I was learning about psychedelics, that, you know, Harvard was the center of LSD research, because Timothy Leary and Richard Albert had been supposedly kicked out for something when it was actually something else entirely. And when all the while it was Stanford University that was the front seat of that whole scene. And do the math, where are you going to find more volunteers? Massachusetts or the Bay Area? Yeah. You know. So anyway, I got caught up in that. I had a few years between the time I found out about this, before I could get my little grubby hands on it. But the effect of that is I was hyper-educated. I had talked to a couple hundred Stanford people who were all just raving about
it. Was Ken Casey there at that time? Because he was in
on this. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, he was, like, way old, you know. Way old. And Neil was way old. I mean, when they're in their 30s, you know, through that perspective, when you're in junior high in high school. Yeah. But in 1960 to 62, I had a beatnik for a teacher for two periods of a day at Terman Junior High School. My classmates were the sons and daughters of the Stanford professors, arguably the smartest kids in the fucking world. Yeah. And they give us a beatnik. You know, it couldn't have been better to grow up in the front seat of it. I was also an exopaleorganic geochemist at NASA for a while, and I had the edge over most of them there, and that I'd taken LSD. Made a discovery there because of that. But fortunately, my research project didn't happen, because we had gone to the moon. We had proved that our dick is bigger than the Russian dick after getting our ass kicked five times in a row or something by the Russians. So we didn't need to, Mars is a long walk, you know, so it's, you know, that was the end of that in my career. I came to Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz. I had been coming here since 62, 63 on my 10 speed. And went to the barn a couple of times, and the barn is really, really important, and that's one of my favorite parts of Holly's book, because there's somebody who's there at the barn all the time telling the story of the barn, you know. And, you know, unless you count the Nevada, what is it, Virginia City, the Charlatans thing as a psychedelic venue, and I don't. It's the first psychedelic venue in Scotts Valley, California. Mm-hmm. And the reason why we have a police force in Scotts Valley was because acid was legal, and Santa Cruz County could not chase the hippies out. So they hired their own police department. Mm. And they're still chasing the hippies out. So anyway, I grew up to bail on my science. Not really, I still do science. The record thing is science. I left NASA partially in thanks to Tom Lehrer and his song Werner von Braun. When I started hearing the German accents in 40, 50, 60-year-old people at NASA, and when it was explained to me about a space psychologist who were the people who had worked in the death camps that had been brought over with Werner von Braun and all these people, I don't know about this. And so it was a relief that the funding went away anyway. And in the meantime, I had been playing rock and roll. I collected records. I was the de facto guy of who you go to for phonograph records, you know. I realized...
You have the record collection.
Yeah. I realized that on an acid trip, that what the world needed was a library of all the records.
Yeah.
So whatever you needed was there.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he was talking about, the New York Public Library, they are run by people who have degrees in library Scientology in books. So Alan Dundell told me he had Timothy Leary's record collection or something. You got part of it or something. When I picked up, I got the William Saroyan Foundation in Fresno, didn't want his record collection. They did not want it.
Right.
So we got it, the American Musical Heritage Foundation.
Yeah.
I have Richard Alpert's record collection, which somebody on the inside told me about that in the 70s. He came back from India, and when you've had a spiritual experience with your guru, you have to sell all your worldly possessions and give him the money. So somebody told me about this sale of Richard's stuff, and I went over there and bought all of his records, and that's when I found out he was gay. He was Judy Garland and Broadway shows and all this stuff. And
he
was, oh, look at this.
You could, Broadway shows, yeah.
But I'm not. Right, yeah, exactly. I do too. But the thing is, it is sort of the hallmark of, it's like reading tea leaves or something, reading somebody's record collection or their book collection or something. So I find myself with about 650,000 LPs, 45, 78 cylinders. And I'm not sure it can survive past my death because the people that have the institutional archives
don't care.
Oh, I have a solution for you.
They want to have a clean death.
Brewster Kahle.
If they take in a big collection like this man did, then that's all this work they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then if they just throw it away, they don't have to do the work. I've seen it over and over again. Stanford and all kinds of places. And it takes real heroes like this man over here to say, this is the stuff they didn't want. Bang, zoom, to the moon. This is terrible. So, and that's what they all kind of do, is they kind of filter out the stuff with the record libraries. They go, oh yeah, I read about this guy in a book, so we'll save that record. But I've never heard of this guy, so he couldn't be important.
Well, where are the records? Where are the records of all of the 60s?
Oh, the records of the 60s? I've got most of them.
This is what you're saying, that we are it.
Oh yeah, but there's also a recorded literature.
Brewster,
if you go to music literature at a university, you'll get sent to sheet music.
By the way, Brewster will scan LPs now.
I'll have to talk to you about that later.
We have one more.
There's a record of the 60s, the original
album
of the 1960s. This is a test record.
Wow.
This is at least as important as any paper item
is. Who signed the back?
Glenn, let's wind it up so we can
hold it up. Glenn, hold up the record so we get a picture of you.
Yes, we want to see
and,
that.
And this is a real record.
Yeah. Can I turn it around? No, okay.
You don't want to.
I'll just set it on the table.
Okay.
It's worth about $50,000.
It's
Holly, hold your book up.
Not as priceless as the original.
Yeah.
And this is that signature. A relic of a beatnik youth in Palo Alto. Couldn't have been better.
Great.
So anyway.
Maybe end with where are all these records now?
Most of them are in Washington State at a rich friend's building. It's the building's still already too small. And the what I'm trying to get is the interest.
Well, I see it says here, do not lick this album.
In those days, we had the theory was any people writing to each other in prison or they would put a little acid on the ends of the paper, and so when you're ripped out after you read the letter, you can eat the end of the thing and get stoned. And
go ahead, please. We have one more
so,
about.
Go on, Zigzag. Hi. I guess I'm.
What's your name?
Janae Bennett. And I kind of fell into this pocket because of Holly. I did the artwork.
She did design the artwork on the cover.
Oh,
nice. Nice work.
It's actually a live painting from David Nelson Band tour in Hawaii. So I don't know if you guys remember David Nelson. I'm sure you do.
New Riders of Purple Sage.
Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking Ricky.
Probably the best psychedelic band in existence now.
Yeah, he's amazing. But
the closest thing there is to Jerry Garcia is David Nelson.
Yeah, it's really, really good, really good band. So I used to do a lot of live painting with them, and that was one of the pieces. And we were going through all my stuff, like, what could work behind here? And I saw that one, and I was like, oh, there's this, like, kind of more abstract, wave-looking kind of thing, and maybe that would look better behind, you know, the photograph, because all my other stuff gets kind of intricate. It's a lot of psychedelic art. But yeah, so
well, the picture's covering up a lot of the nice art here because it's kind of like a conch shell.
Yeah,
and but on the DVD like it'll show. You'll be able to see all the art.
I saw your sticker on your car.
Did you see this?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
like,
oh,
you want one? You can have one.
Yeah,
let's pull it off my car.
Cool. I'll rock one on my Subaru.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's a. I'm just so stoked to be a part of this book too, just because. I mean, I grew up in Orange County, so I was nowhere near any of this, you know. It's just something I sparked interest in high school. Maybe even before that. I was really into Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young when I was little, so I kind of got exposed to songs that basically talked about all that stuff, so that's kind of where my in was. My dad just worked for Boeing, total straight guy, football player, but somehow he liked Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. I think it was my mom through her sister who was a hippie. Yeah. So that, and you know, run away to Santa Cruz, but or Watsonville actually. So my parents weren't stoked on how I turned out because they like were like worried I was just like my mom's sister. Which she wasn't really a hippie. She was kind of a later hippie where it was like mostly drug oriented and not really the whole, yeah. So she listened to some good music, I guess, in a way, but you know, it's like 70s stuff. So Glenn's like, oh, whatever. But I like that stuff just cause I grew up on it. And but then I would do live painting a lot around the Bay. When I moved up to go to school in Santa Cruz, I went to UC Santa Cruz for 4 years and did art. And that department's like now, which is depressing.
Is it?
Yeah, my last couple years there, it was just like, you had to email the teacher 2 quarters ahead of time and be like, put me on the waiting list, like to take a painting class. It was just like ridiculous. I'm so glad I got out of there, right? Like I was just like 4 years, okay, I'm out. You know, I love Santa Cruz. I'm glad. The reason I went there was because I wanted to go to school in the Redwoods and be near San Francisco.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it was rough because my parents were not stoked on that. But we just basically didn't talk very much for a minute. And I never did anything wrong, you know. It was just like, I did good in school and everything, and I was just really into the counterculture, and that kind of freaked them out. And so, you know, they didn't really understand what I was doing, and then I would fall into the hands of people like Glenn and David Nelson. And then I just started meeting all these amazing people through random occurrences through my art, and recently I've been working, hanging out and doing collaborations with Stanley Mouse and stuff like that. So there's, it's like, I don't know, I'm 26 years old, I don't know how I end up in these circles all the time, but it's, I just, I don't know, I guess I grew up loving it, and so it's weird that people my age aren't really into the history of everything. I don't even think they're conscious of it, really, half the time. So that's kind of my goal for with my art and my music and everything, is to kind of tap back into it, but also just, I mean, not like they have to redo everything, because it's not going to happen that way, but there's so much technology and stuff that's being, it's just an overload right now on our generation. I feel like it's just, there's so much you can do and so much information. You're just like, what do I do? And maybe it was a more simple time, but just when it comes to computers, Facebook, all these things, like you're so wrapped up in a social media clusterfuck, you're just every day you're just like, oh, I have to deal with all these emails, and as an artist, I have to keep networking and keep communicating, but it just like overwhelms me. I just want to go paint with a band in Hawaii. Come out with a book cover, you know? So that's what I've been doing in the past year. I've been doing a lot of music, so it was cool to get kind of back into my art realm when, you know, we connected to this artwork for the cover, and just recently did some stuff with Peter Rowan, and that was amazing. And it's just, you know, so it's, there's some influence for sure that I think people need to be aware of my age. Because everyone's kind of just looking at the TV screen or the news feed on Facebook, and you're just like, okay, well, none of this really means anything.
Can you clarify live painting for me?
So I go to a show, I put a blank canvas up, and it's usually, I usually work with bands versus like big events. I've done events and done DJ shows and stuff where it's like 5 hours of painting, but usually that's with this collection of artists I work with. Sometimes these girls, and we have this little thing called Collective Manifestation, and we just kind of go out and do these huge murals or huge paintings, and I kind of did the music thing the past year. And
so while you're there, you're painting, and
you're on stage, right?
Are you on the stage
sometimes,
or off?
It depends, the venues and the bands. But yeah, it's all interpretation, it's all, like, I call it sound synesthesia, where you're just basically interpreting the sound versus people who paint portraits. Sometimes someone will come out in the painting just because it's a bunch of abstraction, and then, you know, I'll see a leg and a corner of a guitar, maybe, and I'm like, oh, okay, I can, like, you know, pull someone out. But yeah, around set break, it's like a total chaotic color mess, and everyone's just like, what is this girl doing over here? Just like, just having fun with paints, you know? But then, you know, maybe like set break, someone will say something to me like, oh, that looks like Jerry or something, you know? Maybe they'll, of course everyone wants to say Jerry's in like every painting, but like, it's just, you know, one of those things. But yeah, sometimes someone will suggest something, and then I'll pull it out, you know, when I didn't even see it before, maybe. And it's an art therapy. That's like basically what I started doing it for, was for my own art therapy. And then it became art therapy for the mass, you know, and whoever wants to be involved in it. And yeah, so it's all improv, every single painting pretty much. And I don't touch them after the show. Usually
after the
music stops, and I was so bummed that I went back into it, because it's all just, it's an artifact. That's like why I create them. And I work with a lot of older people, because I really believe that, like, you know, I want to capture that moment. You know, I could go paint with all these new age bands and all these, you know, certain festivals that are kind of just going to be around for a while, but I like have very small amount of time to do anything anyways, because I have so many projects. But when I do have time, I like to go, you know, where, I don't know, it's just, there's a different vibe to a lot of the older scene, kind of 60 psychedelic music and rock, and I'm like really influenced by that. So I guess that's what I like to listen to when I paint. So
I'm glad you're here.
Thanks. Thank you.
Full disclosure, I wanted to say that next to R. Crumb, this is my favorite artist in the world. But make sure you see some of her artwork. And she's just been talking about her live painting. She does also studio work and everything. That's brilliant. And everybody should see the further posts.
So maybe it's time to have a short break, following which, whatever you please. And I just want to ask that, if you have an email address, that has not received an email from me, then and if you want to be on our mailing list, please give me your email address.
Then you talk to me.
Then you just connect to Holly or anybody who has, because email is my only medium.
Okay.
Can I tell one really short?